I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I realized the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5 kilometer run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5 minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral health is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Water Flosser. It removes bacteria from deep between the teeth and below the gum line, where traditional brushing and flossing cannot reach, while stimulating gums to improve circulation. Paired with my Sonic toothbrush, I love that it gives me a professional feel clean at home. Use discount code GOODGLOW25 at spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Hello and welcome to the Good Glow podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today I have an incredibly special episode with Ciara O'Malley. This story will be brought to you over 2 episodes. It's so incredibly touching. And when you listen to Ciara speak, you'll understand why. Ciara and her boyfriend, David Gavin, moved to Vancouver back in 2017. They were childhood sweethearts from Mayo, and they were so in love and so excited to start this new chapter in their lives. David was mad into GAA and he joined a local club. And on their way to an away match one weekend, they stopped off at a lake to cool down. David jumped into the water and he briefly came up, waved to his friends, but then was pulled back under and never resurfaced. This is such a tragic story, and Ciara is really going to take us on a journey with her over the next 2 weeks. So as I said, this is an incredible episode, a story about true love and family and support. So I'll leave it at that and I'll let Ciara take it from here. Ciara, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Georgie, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here today. I've been really looking forward to this.
We connected about 6 months ago. Your sister actually got in touch with me to tell me your story, and you sent me a copy of your book, and we've been keeping in touch since then. And I'm so glad the day has come that I finally get to sit down with you. I've been reading your book over the last week or so, and I found it so moving and it's so beautiful. You've achieved such a beautiful thing with it. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. David really did guide me to get to this moment and through all the pain and everything. So I'm just so grateful, and it's lovely to hear that feedback.
Your story is so moving, and you've been through so much over the past few years, and thank you so much for sharing your story, because it's not easy to do so. But let's go back, I suppose, to life before this awful tragedy happened. And you speak so beautifully about your time with David and how you guys met. So let's go back to the first time you ever met him.
Yeah, and I actually have a picture of him here looking at me. But me and David would have met when he was 16, I was 17, and it was at a concert in our local town. And that was it then. We were we were stuck together. And we were in school at the time. I think I was in fifth year. So we went through college together and had awful crack. And then we moved to Dublin. David moved to Dublin and I followed him. And yeah, we spent 10 years together, which I'm so grateful for now. And he really was just an amazing person. And you've read the book, and he was absolutely stone mad about football.
Yeah, I really got that impression.
Oh, he was stone mad about it. I was his second girlfriend. But yeah, we were childhood sweethearts, and we moved through all the ages. Because you know, then when we went to college, we were like, oh my God, college now. If we make it through college, that's it. But I think me and David knew before we went to college, you know, that we planned to spend the rest of our lives together. I suppose, you know, I did spend the rest of David's life with him. But yeah, we had some lovely adventures. We loved traveling. We'd gone to loads of countries. And I suppose I'm so grateful now, because we made the most of our time together. Do you know, we did we went traveling. We'd loads of amazing experience, and he was just so kind and gentle. And he was 6'3", and he was so tall, but he was like a big kind. He was the kindest person you'd ever meet. And I suppose, yeah, we had gone through college, and then we were working in Dublin, and we had something in us for another adventure. And I had always wanted to go to Canada. And to be honest, I never thought I'd get David away from the football. So I was delighted when he said, come on, let's go.
The thing that struck me about your story, and I think, you know, we all had boyfriends growing up and things, but you were a very together couple from the start. So I was surprised when I got to the bit of your book when you had moved to Canada that it was just the two of you. You know, you were setting up your life over there together. It wasn't you were with your group of friends and he was with his group of friends. What was it about David? You obviously felt so safe with him and so secure with him. He was obviously so committed to you.
Yeah, I suppose like I'm big into now, you know, it's like feelings. And I knew the minute I met David that there was something special about him, because before that I was didn't want to be tied down to anyone. But he was just, I think he's touched everyone's life now. And he just was so special. I give you an example. We were on holidays 1 year and we're in the airport. And all of a sudden I turned around and David is holding on to this baby. And he's walking through the airport with this random baby. And there's a mother beside him pulling the suitcase. And that's the type of person he was. He would have done anything for anyone. And he was just, he just had everything going for him. And he just loved the bones of me and the two of us. We just had something really special that is nearly hard to explain, because the two of us were just so content with each other. And yeah, we just wanted to spend our life and experience what life had in store together, you know, and we were independent as well. So yeah, Canada was exciting because it was the first time really that we went off. It was just the two of us. And it was so special, you know, because we got to spend even more time with each other.
How did your families feel about you taking such a big step? Like, did you say we'll go for a year and we'll come back? What was the plan?
Well, they didn't believe us because David was so mad into football. When we said we were going, they're like, they're not. Because we had been saying for a few years, we'll go to Canada. I don't think anyone believed us. We'd booked, I think, in the September and we left the following February. And I think it was only, we'd a going away party 2 weeks beforehand. And I think that's when people were like, okay, they're actually going. Do you know? And yeah, they were delighted for us as well, though, to go and experience. And they were all excited to come and visit us and see what Canada has in store. But obviously, they were going to miss us. And the same for us. Like, you know, we were so excited to go, but we were going to miss our families. But we were excited for them to come over and see our new life over there. So we were just looking for an adventure, really, and excited to embark on something new.
What was it about Canada? Why Canada?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think Canada, something about Canada stuck out, and we had gone skiing a few years previous and David fell in love with skiing. I loved skiing, but not to the extent David did. He loved any kind of sport. He was a real general junkie. He used to leave me at the end of the slope. I'd be following behind him. But yeah, and Canada had the outdoors, it had the hot weather in the summer, then you could go skiing, just the range of activities and meeting new people and new jobs and just an adventure, really.
So you go to Canada, you get an apartment, and luckily you both fell on your feet and got jobs Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. So you said that kind of allowed you to live a relatively normal life together. You got to spend loads of time together in the evenings and the weekends. And tell us about the friends that you made when you got there.
Oh, yeah, we really did fall on our feet. The friends, we ended up meeting all Irish people. I remember there was an event on and it was Irish in Vancouver. And David was like, Aaron, now we won't bother going to that. And I said, like, come on. So I brought him to it and we thought we'd be home within 2 hours. And we spent the whole night out with amazing people who now are, you know, our best friends, and they were with me through everything. And we really did. Yeah, we fell on our feet. They were amazing. And we were living by the sea as well. And we'd always spoke about living beside the sea. And our apartment was literally stone throw away from the beach. It was just amazing. So we were really, really lucky. And it was just unreal.
And what was it, a typical weekend? What did it look like for you?
Well, there was no resting with David, which is amazing, because he really did, a bit of me thinks he knew something within him, knew his time was getting cut short, because we were doing something every weekend. Friday, we'd go out and we'd meet our friends. Saturday, we'd go hiking or we'd go skiing. And then we'd come back and we'd probably go to the pub for a few drinks, and Sunday we'd be off again doing some activity. And it was amazing. We became really close with two other couples, and we were like a little family. And, you know, we were playing football as well. And he even got me playing football, which provided great entertainment to him, because it was his love and here I was playing it. But it was awful crack, and it was a great way to meet people. And yeah, our weekends were just so much fun. They flew because we were doing so much. And in the evenings as well. So we'd go to the beach or meet our friends or go to football training. So we were always doing stuff. It was amazing. We really got to see a lot of Vancouver in such a short time, which is just so amazing.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first I wanted to give you an update on my Spotlight Oral Care Teeth Whitening Strips that I've been wearing for an hour a day for 2 weeks. I've been keen to whiten my teeth and have a healthy smile, and I've seen instant results since using them. Spotlight Oral Care has something for everyone. It was founded by two Irish dentists, so you can be rest assured that the products are safe and effective. They're free from toxins, cruelty-free and palm oil-free, and their toothpaste tubes are 100% recyclable. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more. Now, back to my conversation.
So how long was it that you were living in Canada until David's accident?
So we moved there in the February, and David's accident happened the end of June. So it wasn't that long at all, only a couple of months. But I mean, we really did cram a lot in and see a lot and have just amazing experiences with amazing people. And I'm just so grateful for that.
It made me really sad that on the day of David's accident that you were so happy, so content. You remember obviously everything about that day so clearly, but you had this, it was like an innocence that you didn't know obviously what was happening, and you were still in your little bubble of happiness. So talk us through, I suppose, maybe the last time you saw David and what was going on at that time.
Yeah, so the last time, the night before David left for the football training, we would have went and celebrated my birthday. And it was just like, I think back now and it couldn't have been any more perfect. We went and we had dinner, and then we went and got ice cream, and the sun was shining. It was so warm, and we were walking around Vancouver with not a care in the world. And it really was just perfect, like you couldn't make it up now. It was that perfect when I look back. And then that evening we went home, and the next morning then he left for the football training. So I would have kissed him and said goodbye, and I'll see you in a few days. And yeah, then that day was actually my birthday. So David was he would have been in Calgary at that stage, or heading to Calgary for the football match. And yeah, I suppose I was just elated that day. I finished work, and I had organised with a group of my friends that we were going to the beach and we were going to have a barbecue for my birthday. And a few weeks previous, I remember saying to David, I was like, oh, please don't go, like, it's my birthday, do you know, because I kind of thought, well, maybe no one will want to hang out with me or spend time, you know, because we were so new to Vancouver. And then I kind of was like, oh, this is amazing, like, I've got plans. And I was delighted David was off doing what he loved. So yeah, I was on the bus home and I was happy as Larry, smiling away, and the sun was shining. And my biggest care that evening was, what will I wear? What'll I wear? We were having a barbecue. Yeah. What'll I get in the shop to cook? What'll I drink? You know, like, as in, I really did. You know that buzz you get on a Friday evening when you finish work and you're just like, whoa, that was me.
Yes. You said you tried to ring David a number of times and he didn't answer, but it kind of didn't click with you that there was something wrong.
Oh, I was in my own. I think in the book I call it like a bubble of joy or something. I was so elated and in such good form. I kind of didn't pass any heed. I was like, oh, he's probably busy, or maybe his battery has died, or, you know, I didn't pass heed for a long time. I just kind of said, you know what, I left him a voicemail and said, you know, he'll ring me back. And I honestly thought he would, you know. And I suppose things kind of took a different form from there, really.
When you think back to that day, and it's probably like looking at your life from the outside in, like you can see yourself that day on the bus and getting ready and picking up some things in the shop. Like, what do you think when you think about that person, you know, that day?
Yeah. I remember it being in the house and we'd no aircon at the time and the weather was so warm, and you know when you're putting makeup on and it was nearly dripping off my face, but I was so happy. I was like, oh, it's fine. But thinking back, I'm like, oh my God, that's to where I am now. It's like a completely, I feel like I've gone through 7 different versions of myself, if that makes sense. And it's like, nearly sometimes I'm like, oh my God, did that even happen? You know, but I suppose in one way I kind of feel like, oh my God, did I feel so joyful or happy because something within me knew something was coming? Because once I found out, like, I didn't feel them feelings of joy or happiness for the longest time. And sometimes I thought I'd never feel them again. And yeah, I suppose looking back on the evening I spent with David, you know, it took me a long time to even, you know, be so grateful for that because I was in so much pain. But now I can look back and say, do you know what? We got to spend a perfect night together before my birthday. You know, we didn't end on, there was no fighting or anything. It was, you know, I kissed him goodbye and I didn't get to, you know, see him again. But I got to have a lovely experience with them beforehand. So I'm so grateful for that.
So the doorbell rings and it's your friends. And yeah, they're obviously here, as you think, to celebrate your birthday and have a lovely night together. But to kind of talk us through what happened in that moment.
Oh, yeah. So they were early, which they were never early. So there was so many alarm bells going, really, that I should have picked up on. David wasn't answering his phone. They were early, but I was still just elated and I was just so excited to be going and spending time with my friends and, you know, all the fun that lay ahead of us. So I answered the door and I say their hearts were broken because I was so like, oh my God, you're here, come on in. And they were like, we want you to sit down. So I didn't pass any heed, to be honest. I thought, they have a present. I was like, oh my God, they're sitting me down to give me my birthday present. And that is exactly where my mind frame was at. And they sat me down and they just said, it's David. And I just heard the words David and instantly I knew. I was like, I couldn't hear. I actually took me a while to hear anything else bar the words David, David. And I just looked at their faces and they were just devastated. And they were like, David Lake. And I was like, oh my God. And instantly I just was like, oh my God, I was trying to ring David and he didn't answer. And then in my head, I was like, I rang him a few times and I was like, oh my God. So my first initial reaction was to go to the bathroom because in my head, I was like, okay, I just need to process. So I went into the bathroom and I rang David and it went to voicemail and I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And I just had this overall feeling of dread. I was like, oh my God, what the hell? And I rang him again and he didn't answer. And then I went out to the kitchen and I just had so many questions. I was like, what do you mean, Lake? What do you mean? And I think at that time, my mind had only kind of process, David, there's a leak, something has happened. And they were able to tell me, you know, David's been in an accident at a lake, and he jumped in and he hasn't resurfaced. And the word resurfaced just hit me like a ton of absolute bricks, because like that means he hasn't, you know, he hasn't came back up. And I was just pacing around the kitchen, and they didn't really, that's all the information they had. They were so aware that they wanted to get to me before I heard from anyone else. So that's why they had nearly left work early or rushed across the other side of town. But that'll show you the amazing, how amazing they were. And like, you know, to have made friends like that in such a short time is just amazing. But I was like, oh my God, I need to know something more. So I didn't know who, I knew who David was with, but I didn't have any phone numbers. So he would have gone to a football match with the local team he was playing. So he was with a gang of lads. So one of my friends got a phone number and I rang them, and I'd say I sounded completely crazy on the phone, because I was like, David, where is David's girlfriend? And they were just like, Kira, we're at the lake. They said, you know, David jumped in off a bridge. He was with the lads. They were having the crack. And he stuck his head up and said, I think he said hello to them, and then he was just pulled back under, and he hasn't resurfaced, and they're there searching for him. And I was like, oh my God. And in my head, a bit of me wanted them to say anything else, anything to give me some kind of glimmer of hope, but there was just nothing. And I was like, I can't even describe the feelings. I think back now and I'm just like, it was feelings I've never experienced in my life, because I've never, the David was my person. He was the person I loved and I love the most in the whole wide world. He was another part of me. And I was like, oh my God, I can't, this can't be real. And straight away, a bit of me was like, okay, this is what I'm hearing is real. But my mind was saying, do you know what? I can't process this. And I was like, I'm a very optimistic person anyway. So I was like, I'm going to cling on to anything I have. So then, I suppose from there, I had to make a decision. Okay, what do we do next? You know, and my heart just broke to pieces, because I just thought of David's parents. I was in Vancouver. I was, you know, where David was. It happened at a lake about 5.5 hours from Vancouver. So I just thought, oh my God, we have to tell David's parents. And my heart was broken, because I was in Vancouver. I was in Vancouver, so I could get there quickly, whereas they were the other side of the world. So I rang my parents. And
what time would it have been then?
So it would have been probably about 3 o'clock in the morning in Irish time. So my parents, God. And that would startle anyone anyway, do you know? And I can't even remember the conversation now, but I suppose it was the first time I had to say, I said, David's been involved in an accident. I don't even think I could use the word drowning accident at the time, but I told them and they knew, and you could just hear, you know, you could just feel their hearts like, oh my God. And I was like, please, will you go in and tell David's parents? So they did that. And then I was with my four friends then, who were just amazing. And they were like, Kira, let's, you know, we'll get you to the lake. Whatever we need to do, we will support you. I called them my little Canadian family, because they really were, they just were holding on to me, and they were broken. You could see like they were just, because it was the little gang of us, the six of us that were hanging out every weekend, and, you know, they were trying to be strong for me, and they were amazing. So then it was like, okay, what will we do? And I was like, I need to get there. I need to get to the lake.
And did your parents go and ring David's parents, or did they knock on the door?
So my parents would have, and they would have had a really good relationship with David's parents, because we'd been going out for so long, and, you know, so they would have went into their house and had to knock on the door and tell them. because it's not something you could do over a phone call, do you know? Yeah, and they, like, even recently, you know, mom was saying, you know, and dad about that, and like how hard that was, because, like, you know, and for them, imagine, like, there, it was just awful. And I was kept thinking, oh my God, this, like, how, I couldn't bear to think of how it was for them getting that news. I kind of felt, in one way, not, yeah, grateful sounds like an off word, but I was like, at least I can kind of get to David quicker. I felt like, you know, they, like, for them, it was so hard being so far away at that moment in time.
So you were in the apartment then, and you obviously, I presume, want to jump in the car and just go.
Yeah, is that
what you did?
Yeah. So I was told I'd have to wait for the local police services to come and tell me. So I was waiting for them, but I knew, so in my head, I already know, I just need to get there. So I did wait around for a little while and they didn't come. So I just said, you know what, it's more important, I need to get to David. And my friends had a car and they just said, listen, we'll drive you. And I was like, oh my God. So the four of us all hopped off and we got their car ready and we just hit the road. And yeah, it was an awful 5.5 hour journey. And yeah, it was amazing. I suppose they took that. I didn't have to worry about that. You know, one of them drove and they, you know, I remember packing a bag, and this will show you, in my head, I thought, okay, we'll just go there. We'll find David. It'll all be grand. You know, in my head, I was like, okay, he's a really strong swimmer. He's gone off. He's over the other side of the lake and he's fine. Like, that totally unrealistic, really, when you think now. But in that, at that time, I wasn't in the right mind frame at all. I wanted anything that gave me that glimmer of hope that, okay, I'm going to see David in the flesh. We're going to, this is all just some little blip in the plan and everything will be okay. So yeah, I packed, what did I pack? I think I packed two bottoms and a top. Like, I didn't even bring that much clothes at all. Because I think we get there, we'll find David alive and it'll all be well.
I suppose at that point you're thinking, like, this doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, you read about things like this. You might see something like this on the TV, but this surely cannot be happening right now to me.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I was like, no, this is not. Like, I literally was like, this can't. I wanted to keep pinching myself, be like, am I dreaming? Am I in a nightmare? Is this, you know? But I suppose with every even half an hour that went, and especially the journey to the lake, it just kept getting realer and realer and realer. And I suppose on the journey then, I would have got a phone call then from David's dad. And that was when I was like, oh my God, you know, they had got the news and, you know, they were checking in with me and I was saying, listen, I'm on the way to the lake. And I just was like, oh my God, this is real. And then about 10 minutes later, my mind would be like, okay, no, it's fine. You know, it was just a constant, my mind was in a constant loop of what the hell is going on? I don't even know. And my body was, I was feeling emotions I had never, ever, ever felt before that even are hard to describe, to be honest.
So you arrive 5.5 hours later. What sort of scene do you arrive to?
Yeah, so the lake, it was, I think it was about 5 in the morning. It was dark, and the weather was really misty. And we approached the top of the road going down to the lake where David's drowning accident would have occurred. And it was like this big, long, windy, dusty road with load of potholes. And I remember just feeling sick to the core, like absolutely sick anyway. And going down this road, I was like, what, why would you even drive down this road? It was mad, like. And then we pulled up and you could just see the bridge and you could see the lake, and my heart just broke. It was like everything I was trying to kind of keep myself together, being like, okay, you know, he's the other side, he's gone swimming, he's fine, you know, all them little kind of, which you can say is quite unrealistic now. But seeing the bridge and seeing the lake, I was like, oh my God. And it was my mind on the journey down was trying to process what would it look like, what is going to greet me. And I felt sick to the absolute core because I just kept thinking, oh my God, David, please, I need you, where are you? But yeah, and it was, and I suppose I said in the book that it was, you know, the morning, it was dark, it was misty, it was dreary, it exactly how we all felt. You know, and I remember getting out of the car and just walking over to the bridge, and I just fell to pieces. Like, it broke me. I was like, oh my God, like, what the hell? And then at the time, the services had been, they had been searching for David earlier, but because it was nighttime or early morning, they had stopped. So when I got there, I was like, oh my God, why is nothing going on? Like, why is nobody looking for David? I couldn't understand. I was like, oh my God. And I just looked out onto the water and I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I just couldn't. I think for a few minutes, I just froze. I was like, what is this? You know, as you said, that bit of, is this even real? Do you know, it was like we just stepped into a nightmare. And every few minutes it was getting more reality was hitting in even more. And yeah, it was frustrating then because nobody was searching for David, you know. So it was really, really difficult.
When you get there, and I presume the team are still kind of in the vicinity, are they? They haven't left. And you're meeting these people who spent David's last moments with him and you didn't know them. What was it like? Were they Irish? Did they embrace you? Did they try to comfort you?
Oh, they were heartbroken. Do you know, as in, like, so a few of the lads were there that were with David, and they obviously, yeah, they were so comforting. They couldn't do anything more than to, you know, look after me or whatever. But I suppose they were trying to shelter me then as well, that little bit, you know, trying to look after me, because all I wanted to know was what happened, like what was his last words, or what, you know, things like that. And they were so good. Like, and we got there and they were all waiting and they were doing everything they could, you know. And they had been out on boats, the lads, the football lads themselves, looking for David. And sure, they were, you know, my heart felt so sorry for them because they were there, you know, like they had witnessed that. So they were so traumatized as well, but like being really strong. And I suppose some of them, you know, you kind of felt like they kind of didn't know what to say to you, do you know? And yeah, but I have to say, we were, some of them I would have known as well. And it was like straight away, my friends and the football lads, we all just were like, okay, you know, let's just, the support. I think Irish people in general, we're so amazing at supporting each other. And it was just like, okay, we've got each other. Let's, you know, let's do everything we can. And yeah, they were just amazing. Like that day, I remember we were sitting out and it took a few hours for the search teams to arrive. And the lads were like trying to stick food in me, and sure, I didn't want to eat or anything at all. And it was really warm, so they were holding umbrellas over our heads, and, you know, just amazing support. And they were just so strong because they were heartbroken as well, you know.
When you say there about them holding an umbrella over your head to shield you from the sun, like, is there, what a beautiful act of kindness. And I think in a moment where they probably feel so helpless, what can I do?
Yeah.
Okay, I know what I'll do. I'll hold this umbrella over her head. Like, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I mean. Like, and that was only a little snippet. Like, you know, they were amazing. They had tents up during the day, as in going there and, you know, like kept coming up, are you okay? And like everyone was supporting everyone. It was just in amidst all the pain, there was so much love and support. And like, if you think about it, like, these are just friends and people we've met. You know, there was, at that minute in time, David's family hadn't arrived, my family hadn't arrived, but I just felt so supported, and that, you know, we really did, you know, people just came together because we all just had the same common goal to find David.
When you got there, did you kind of expect, okay, we'll find him today?
Yeah.
You know, you'd no idea what was coming for you in terms of the wait. So you probably thought in your mind that you would find him before your families arrived. But what, when your family and David's family, did they arrive together? And, you know, what do you say when they get there and you still haven't found him?
Yeah, so I would have spent a few days there before they had arrived, just with the traveling and, you know, the time difference and everything. And the first day I spent there, I remember begging David. I said, David, please, just let's find you today, because no one else needs to go through this. Because, like, we were watching boats out there and the search teams, and you'd just be staring out onto the water. Okay, please find it, you know. And I just was like, we'll just find you. And then your parents, no one else has to go through this. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And I suppose when they arrived, my heart broke, their heart was broken, you know. And I think I was trying to explain to them what it was like. But I knew when they got out there, they were going to say, oh my God, it's 10 times worse. Because I tried to explain, I suppose, what the lake was like in the book and everything. But when you're there and you see how big it is and what you're dealing with, it really is like it just kind of takes over, and you're like, oh my God, David is somewhere in there. And like, yeah, it's really, really overwhelming.
When you say the lake, and you know, when you picture a lake, it's hard to imagine what it was like. Is it still, did any of the rescue team kind of offer an explanation of what could have happened?
So early on, I suppose it was just myself there, and the search teams were there for the first day, and then they said we to get a specialist dive team up from Vancouver Island. So they were giving us information, but I don't think at the time I was even able to process what they were saying. So when the likes of David's parents landed out, when we were all together, it took us a few days to kind of get the information of how bad the conditions could have been. You know, I think earlier on we were just so focused, okay, let's find him straight away. Let's, you know, we're just going to find him. And then it took us a while to realize that the conditions off the lake were 10 times worse than we thought. So there was an undercurrent in the lake, and there was also a glacier runoff, so the water was really cold. So that could have, you know, that alone, jumping in there, like, David probably wouldn't have realized how cold the water was, or the undercurrents in the water. And the lake was, yeah, some days, every day was different. Like, some days the lake was calm. Another day we were there and there was a big storm and it was choppy, and we're out on boats and they'd have to come in. So it just depended on the day and the weather conditions. But yeah, there was a lot of kind of, every day there seemed to be kind of more odds coming up against us. But we were really lucky with the support and the search teams we did get. Like, we kept getting support from every angle. And in Ireland, we were supported from all over the world. In Ireland, you know, and all over the world, people were donating money to help us find David. And like, we couldn't believe that people, you know, like, I think that was a few days, and we couldn't believe how generous people were being. And that enabled us to get search teams, divers. We had helicopters. We had dog search teams. I've never in my life, and David would have got the nickname Gadget Gav. He was mad into gadgets. Like, he was obsessed. And like, at one stage, there was helicopters above us. There was drones. There was robots. There was robots that go under the water that have a camera. I'd be like, David, are you planning all this? Because I'd never, you know, he would have been in total awe of all the equipment. But like, that was due to the generosity of people all over the world who just wanted to help us find David. And like, we wouldn't have been able to get all that equipment, you know, without that support. So we were totally blown away. And because the conditions of the lake were ever changing and we were getting more information, you know, we had to keep kind of bringing in more resources because the odds were really up against us, to be honest.
Did you start to hear from Irish people that you didn't know in Canada? Did people start reaching out to you to help?
Oh my God. We had people landing at the lake. So where the lake was, it wasn't near a town or whatever. Calgary was probably the nearest kind of big town, and that would have been 3 hours away. And we had people driving from Calgary bringing us cakes and buns and food. And then we had football. We had people coming from Vancouver in carloads to help us, who we had never met, who were part of the football teams. And the football team in Vancouver was linking in with the football team in Calgary. And you turn around and there couldn't be any more food, but there was people there landing there. What can we do? You know, one family came up and they brought their boat. They were like, we're here for the weekend. We have a boat. We'll help you. You know, we'll go out on the lake. What do you need? And like, at one stage, I'd say there was about 30 of us, and there was Canadian people as well, a lot of Irish people, and everyone just there. And like, there was so much love, like, and people were just like, what can we do? It was like, you know, you hear it, like, and you see it in funerals here in Ireland, you know, people just are like, okay, what can we do? Let's, you know, it was amazing. Like, I couldn't blow completely. We were blown away. And I suppose that was helping us hold, you know, giving us strength, because it was like the support of people and communities and all around the world. They were holding us up. They're like, okay, we're here, you know, let's, whatever we can do. It was out of this world, to be honest. And it just showed David touched so many people's life.
You were obviously surrounded by so many people during the day, so much support, so much love, so much, you know, connection, kindness. But what were the nights like? And were you able to be alone?
So I used to go and sneak off and find my own places in the lake, because it was so overwhelming. I was like, oh my God, David's gone, but he's also missing. And my heart was just broken, and you'd be trying to function and you'd be out. And like, we were very active on the search as well. So we would have actively been on the boats. Like, you know, it wasn't like we were kind of back watching what was going on. We actively took a role on, which I think definitely helped, because we felt so involved in finding them. Definitely that time needed. But I suppose everyone was so worried about you. And like, I'd be looking back and there'd be people, my sister now, she's just amazing. And my friends and David's family, like, even though I wanted that time, nobody nearly wanted you to have that time, because they just wanted to know where you were and checking up on you. But the nights were really, really hard, really difficult. And sleeping, I remember the first night going to sleep after hearing and waking up. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you're like, okay. And then instantly it hit me and I was like, oh my God, it scared me to go to sleep. And I suppose I mentioned in the book that I found some kind of relief a few days in sleeping tablets, because my mind couldn't switch off. I couldn't actually switch off from what was going on. I was so focused on finding David, and like, just my body, I was petrified kind of at what was going on, but so focused at the same time of, we need to find him. Like, we need to do everything we can to find them.
Next week on the Go Glow podcast.
We had been advised by the search teams who were helping us and all the support we were getting. They said, you know, the conditions are going to get too bad. We advise you to go home to Ireland and come back the following spring, which would be the following April. So that would be 7 months later. And they said the lake would be frozen over. But as the washer melts in the lake, that would be a good opportunity to find them. And they said, at this rate, you know, that's your best bet. But they did advise us that the odds of even finding him then were quite low. But like we were determined and we had faith and we were going to do everything we could to find David.
Before I go this week, I just wanted to thank Kira again from the bottom of my heart for sharing her story with us. She is so incredible and so brave. And I know through her words about grief and loss that she will help so many people. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. If you enjoyed this episode, please do leave me a review. You can check out more about my story over on thegoodglow.ie or follow me on Instagram, georgie.crawford.